Welcome to episode 42 of the Fredcast for the week of November the 13th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm still a Fred. Welcome back to the Fredcast. It's great to hear this music again. It's great to be back with you. It's been so long, I have way too much news to summarize, so stay tuned because it's coming up next. Following the news, a reminder to get your holiday gift guide ideas in before November the 20th, a review of a great new cycling movie, some cycling audio software that you can use on every ride, indoor and outdoor, and of course, pod-safe cycling music. So sit back, relax, if you're riding your bike hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back once again to yet another episode of the Fredcast. It's number 42, and I have to apologize to you. It's been a little while since I've done a Fredcast, about 2 weeks to be exact. You know, sometimes real life just gets in the way of podcasting, and I've got to apologize to you. But at the same time, I have to thank you. I have gotten so many great emails and voicemails from concerned listeners, just wondering if everything was okay. Nobody thought I had pod faded, although I did put that short, very, very short podcast out about a week ago, letting you know that I was still here and I was still planning on podcasting. Nobody was really afraid that I had pod faded, but they just wanted to make sure that everything was okay. So to set the record straight, everything's fine. I've just been extremely busy at work, very busy with family. I was on a business trip recently and got rear-ended. I'm fine, didn't get hurt, but my car got totaled. So I also had the pleasant yet still unpleasant need to go out and go car shopping and buy a new car. So that's all behind me. Of course, I got to put bike racks on it now, but you know, that's a good problem to have, and I'm ready to get right back into podcasting and back on a regular schedule. So welcome back to another Fredcast. Let's get right into the news. Well, while lots of us here in the Northern Hemisphere are getting into our off-season now, down under, spring has sprung, and cycling racing is off and running down in Australia, New Zealand, and everywhere in the Southern Hemisphere. And unfortunately, this past weekend, there was a bit of a tragedy in a race in New Zealand. This is the Tour of the Southland. And this was in the eighth stage of the race on Saturday, a 79-kilometer event from Te Anau to Lumsden. Again, forgive me for the mispronunciation if I've done that. Australian cycling medalist and former stair climbing champion Paul Craik was involved in a bad crash along with several other riders toward the end of the stage. What happened was they were coming down the road and they were hit by a powerful wind gust just in the final 2 kilometers of the stage. Paul and several other riders went down, and when they did, 4 of the 5 riders that went down, according to the article, got up. Unfortunately, Paul didn't. Paul hit his back on a fence post, and he actually lost consciousness for a couple of minutes. But when he came around, he was lucid, and all his vitals were good, according to an article that I read. But they ended up having to take him to a hospital, and he's going to need surgery. He's got minor fractions to his C1 and C2 cervical vertebrae and dislocations of his T5 and T6 thoracic vertebrae. Of course, he also had some cuts and bruising. Hopefully, he'll be able to recover real quickly, but I wanted to bring that to you, those of you who are cycling fans from down under. Paul was a member of the Australian cycling team at the 2004 Road World Championships in Italy. He placed 3rd in the road race at last year's Australian Open Road Championships, and this year he placed 2nd on the 4th stage of the Jacobs Creek Tour Down Under. And he's raced as a professional in Italy this year with the Naturino Sapore di Mare team. Interestingly, I knew nothing about this before I read the article, and I had to do a little bit of research online. As I mentioned earlier, Paul was a former stair climbing athlete. And for some of us, at least, perhaps those of us who are ignorant to this sport, stair climbing to me is something that you see people doing in an indoor gym on one of those electronic machines while they watch TV or listen to their iPod or read the newspaper. Stair climbing is actually a pretty grueling sport, because where Paul has excelled, for instance, is in a race to the top of New York's Empire State Building. If you are familiar with the Empire State Building, there are 86 flights of stairs from the lobby of the Empire State Building up to the observation deck. That's 1,576 stairs. Paul actually holds the record for the fastest ascent at 9 minutes and 33 seconds. I've personally been to the Empire State Building and taken the elevator to the top, and there's a point where you have to take the elevator to one level, and then you have to get on another elevator and go to the next level, and usually because of the number of tourists that are there, you can't even take the elevator to the top of the Empire State Building in under 10 minutes. So we wish all the best to Paul for a very speedy recovery, as I know all of you cycling fans down under do as well. Okay, so following on the heels of what is a developing story about a cyclist who has just undergone some injuries, I wanted to bring you an update from somebody we've talked about here on the show for many, many months, and that, of course, is professional racer Saul Raisin from the Credit Agricole team. Many of you know that Saul had a very, very bad crash at the beginning of this year's pro cycling season, and he was in a coma for a while, and his doctors really didn't expect that he would survive, let alone get back on a bicycle. Well, two things that I wanted to bring to your attention, and these are thanks to listener Mike in Houston. Number one is a very great article that appeared on the CBC's website at cbc.ca. Don't worry, of course, I've got a link in the show notes to it. Just about Saul, his crash, and about where he is in his rehabilitation. It's a great article for you to read. I recommend that you go over and read it. But listener Mike also pointed me to a wonderful post over on bike forums. And by the way, if you're not somebody who goes to bike forums on a regular basis, I definitely recommend it. That's at www.bikeforums.net. This is probably the internet's largest discussion forum for cyclists of all levels, all disciplines. It's a great place to go when you have a question that you can't get answered here on the Fredcast or on the Fredcast forums, but also just to have some great camaraderie with your fellow cyclists. But here's a great post about Saul Raisin and just sort of about his spirit. And he just seems like a great guy. Let me read this to you. It says, "Today, several members of my bike club participated in Spin for Kids, a charity ride for a camp for seriously ill and special needs children. One of the celebrity participants was Saul Raisin, a Dalton, Georgia native and pro road racer for Credit Agricole, who is recovering from a bad crash that left him in a coma for several days with his life and career in serious danger. My 11-year-old son is a fanatical follower of pro cycling. He made a poster last night with the Credit Agricole logo on it in hopes of getting Saul's signature. Saul was very friendly and supportive of his young fan, and he signed the poster, posed for pictures, and chatted with my son about riding and about believing in miracles. Early in the ride, Saul rode past us on the road and slowed down to ride along and talk to my son. Then he rode along talking to me for a couple of minutes before shooting back up the road to catch his father, who was riding the 50-mile ride with him. Saul also had his publicist take a picture of him with my son and the poster to put on the website." So if you go to the show notes and click on the link, you'll be able to see this post on bike forums, as well as if you go to Saul Raisin's website, you'll also see some great photos of Saul at this ride. So here's a guy who really thought his career was over. His family for some time was concerned that perhaps his life was over. He's rehabilitating himself. He's getting back into cycling and into shape. Yet he still has time to go to a charity ride and to chat with an 11-year-old fan. You know, with a lot of the negative press that cycling has gotten over the last 6, 9, 12 months, this is really a breath of fresh air. And that's one of the reasons I put this at the top of the news, because this is great. This is exactly what cycling needs. And by the way, when you go and read the CBC article that I've pointed to in the show notes, you'll also find another really great thing that's going on that's connected to Saul Raisin, and it's this. When you see the picture of Saul, you'll see he's still wearing his Credit Agricole kit. He's wearing his entire uniform from the team. One of the reasons for that is that despite Saul's horrific crash and the fact that nobody was actually sure that he'd ever get back to professional racing, his team stood by him and continues to stand by him and support him. And if you know anything about the Lance Armstrong story, if you've read Lance, any of Lance's books, you know that Lance's Cofidis team dropped him almost immediately after it seemed like Lance's days were numbered on this earth as a result of his cancer diagnosis. So again, Sol Raisin, Crédit Agricole, at least in my book, get a gold star for the year for breathing some life and some fresh air and some positive energy into the world of professional cycling. Well, in the last episode of the Fredcast, I told you that there may be a challenger to Interbike, the industry's big trade show that occurs every fall in Las Vegas, used to occur in Anaheim, California. And that's coming from Eurobike, which is one of Germany's major cycling trade shows that takes place in Friedrichshafen every year. And they announced that they were considering the possibility of hosting a competing show to Interbike at around the same time up in Oregon in the northwest of the United States. The National Bicycle Dealers Association, or NBDA, last week reaffirmed their support for Interbike in the coming days, in the coming years. Bob Updegraff, the current NBDA president and owner of Harley's Bicycles in Hutchinson, Kansas, states, quote, "For years, Interbike has produced fantastic trade shows benefiting both the exhibitors and the attending retailers. Although competition pushes business to create the most optimum products the market demands, we believe Interbike is best positioned to deliver the most productive marketplace for bicycle industry suppliers, our members, and the specialty bicycle retailer base." Fred Clements, NBDA's executive director, said, quote, "It is too early to know whether this new event will have any impact on Interbike or the NBDA. Our industry has certainly supported multiple trade shows in the past with some success." And there, by the way, they're talking about a former trade show that never really became a real competitor to Interbike. That was the Bio Show, or the Bicycle Industry Organization. He goes on to say, "But the last few years with a one-show environment has allowed for exceptional trade events and a growing sense of community between suppliers and retailers more than ever before. The NBDA will continue to enthusiastically partner with Interbike to have dynamic and useful events that serve the interests of our members and our industry." There's not a great deal of information, by the way, about exactly what Eurobike is planning. There's a lot of talk about it, and it's something we're planning on talking about on the next episode or two of the Spokesman podcast. And so I'd recommend that you listen to The Spokesman. That's www.the-spokesman.com, because there we've got a broad spectrum, broad range of people from the cycling industry, who some of whom have some very good insight into what's going on and what could happen with the Interbike-Eurobike rivalry that's going to be happening over the next couple of years. And I think that's a good place for you to go to get that information. But of course, I'll keep you updated here on the Fredcast, because one of the questions I keep getting from a lot of you in the email is, if they do this show, will they have a consumer day? And if they do, will that also mean that perhaps Interbike will consider a consumer day? So once again, as I say often, stay tuned. Hey, we've gone almost 14 minutes without talking about doping. Are you proud of me? It's funny, because I got a great email the other day from listener Steve, who wanted to know when I was going to be issuing yet another Operation Puerto cast. I guess that's what he's gone to calling the Fredcast as well as the Spokesman, because it seems like all we ever talk about. So I apologize for the next couple of stories, because what can I say? This seems to be what really dominates cycling news. The first one, I think a lot of you who are Floyd Landis fans and who are Lance Armstrong fans and who are skeptical of the allegations against Floyd Landis for doping, I think you're going to like this story. This one comes from the Associated Press. It appears that a hacker broke into the computers at the Châtenay-Malabry laboratory, which is the one that tested Floyd Landis's A and B samples from the Tour de France, and is also the lab that Lance Armstrong had some troubles with. This is the French lab that is involved in all of the hoopla going that surrounds the Floyd Landis affair. Well, a hacker got into their computers And although it doesn't say exactly what data the hacker was able to get, it does say, according to the French sports daily L'Equipe, that not only did the hacker access data on the computers, but they also sent out letters to the International Olympic Committee and the World Anti-Doping Agency, as well as to a lab in Montreal. These letters were sent with the aim of discrediting the lab by calling into question its reliability. Now, a complaint was filed with the French police, and the complaint was lodged by French anti-doping agency president Pierre Baudry. That complaint was filed on November the 7th. According to Baudry, quote, "It's true that there were letters sent as if they were coming from the lab, and they were sent to foreign labs such as the one in Montreal, which immediately caught our attention. We're talking about manipulation of information." Now, of course, in the wake of all of the doping scandals that have gone on in the world of cycling, there's lots of people who are scrambling to try to figure out how to make sure that our sport is clean, especially among the professional racers. Well, Team CSC thinks that they've found one way, and that is to conduct nearly 800 of their own tests on their Team CSC riders next season. This is going to be what I saw in a report called the most rigorous anti-doping program in the world of cycling. Riders on Team CSC are going to be subjected to surprise out-of-competition blood and urine tests for EPO, steroids, and human growth hormone, and the tests will be used to build up a physiological profile to identify changes caused by the use of banned substances. This is going to be administered by the team, and they're going to be using a specific hospital in Denmark to do this. Now, according to team manager Bjarne Riis, quote, "Our ambition is to be pioneers in the work against doping, so we're very proud to initiate this program." Testing's going to begin next month at the team's official training camp in South Africa. And, of course, what's interesting about this is the fact that their former number one rider was Ivan Basso. Ivan Basso, of course, is the champion of the Giro d'Italia, but he's probably best known right now for the fact that he was barred from being able to participate in the 2006 Tour de France just one day before the event because he was potentially implicated in the Operación Puerto scandal. And of course, we know now that he was cleared of those charges and that he's now free to return to professional cycling racing. So I think Team CSC feels that this way they'll be able to have a little bit better control over their athletes, have a little bit better knowledge of what's going on with their athletes in the 2007 season and beyond, and we'll see whether or not other teams decide to follow suit with a practice just like this. And while we're on the subject of Team CSC and Ivan Basso, let's talk about what Basso's doing now, now that he's free to race again, at least until and if the Italians reopen their investigation, if they get more evidence out of the Puerto trial that's going on in Spain. Now that he's free to race again, Basso has signed with a new team, and that team is Team Discovery. Basso signed a 2-year deal, and although the exact details have not been released, I did see a report just prior to the announcement from Team Discovery that they were looking at a $6 million deal, multi-year deal. Basso's now a part of Team Discovery. We'll be seeing him in the Disco kit at the training camp and next year on the Pro Tour. There's a lot of discussion going on about the fact that he's now a part of Team Discovery, especially in the letters over on VeloNews. There are all sorts of people who are asking a lot of questions. Will Team Discovery require Basso to do that DNA test to prove once and for all whether or not he was involved in doping? Did Discovery make a mistake by signing Basso? Because should he be re-implicated in the scandal when the evidence gets released back to the Italian prosecutors, would that potentially ban the entire Discovery Channel team from future races like, oh, I don't know, the Tour de France? And how does Levi Leipheimer feel? Leipheimer, who, at least according to some of the writers on the VeloNews letters section, maybe he wasn't on a team that was really up to supporting him in this year's Tour de France. And now that he was wooed back to Discovery, how's he feeling now that they've hired another team leader in Ivan Basso? And where does that leave Levi in the coming season? So a lot of questions being asked by a lot of cyclists out there. There's a lot of emotions one way or the other, especially among American cycling fans, a lot of whom really feel like Team Discovery is quote-unquote their team in the European Pro Tour. And there's a lot of discussion and emotion going back and forth whether or not the signing of Basso to Team Discovery was positive or negative. And of course, all of that will go on and only time will tell, and we'll see what happens in the 2007 Pro Tour. But for now, Ivan Basso, definitely one of the team leaders of 2007's Team Discovery Channel Pro Cycling. Now, in addition to the letter writers on Velo News, Jens Voigt, the winner of this year's Tour of Germany, has now spoken out about his feelings about Ivan Basso's return to cycling with the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team. He says basically it's not good for the sport's image. He was being interviewed earlier this week on the German television network ARD's online site, and he said, quote, "I can definitely see that it's not good for our image. To the public out there, it looks like nothing has changed." He then went on to say, "It's not right that a small minority makes everyone's life difficult." And by that, of course, he's talking about those people who have been implicated in doping, and that includes Floyd Landis as well as Ivan Basso. He went on to say, quote, "Doping isn't a misdemeanor. I believe riders have recognized that. We're all eager to ensure the sport has a good image." So this whole doping that's going on in cycling is raw for everybody, not just for the fans, but also for the cyclists themselves. And with Voigt speaking out, I think that that really shows how the amount of attention that has been focused upon doping and the way that it can polarize not only cycling fans, but pro cyclists as well. Meanwhile, another individual who was implicated potentially in the Operación Puerto affair and who was barred from the 2006 Tour de France, Jan Ulrich, well, you know that he, of course, has been fired by his T-Mobile team, and that was in July after he was named in the investigation. But he's back in training, and he's looking for a new team for 2007. According to the BBC, Ulrich insists that he's no longer part of the inquiry, and he's determined to find a way to return to the sport. He said, quote, "I'm not giving up without a fight. I've been cycling for 3 hours every day. My aim now is to take out all the pent-up frustration in my cycling. If I manage to do that, I'll have a hell of a lot of energy." Now, the Italian team Tinkoff is said to have offered Jan a ride for next season on their second-tier continental circuit. And this is something that we talked about on a previous Fredcast, but I didn't realize that this was on their second-tier team. That's quite a demotion for a guy like Jan Ulrich, who was really seen as a potential to win the 2006 Tour de France. So I think Jan's in still a little bit more of a precarious position than a guy like Ivan Basso. Although he says on his website that he's no longer involved in the ongoing investigation, he's still under investigation by German authorities. And so I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult for him to get the kind of a deal that Basso got, and whether or not there's going to be a team that's willing to take the chance and take the risk of bringing Ulrich on board while he's still under investigation. Now, look, it's November. The pro cycling season doesn't begin for a couple of months, so there's still a chance that he might find a ride after all. And with all these investigations going on with current cyclists, there is a trial going on in France of David Miller, as well as several other members of the French cycling team Cofidis. And they're on trial over a doping scandal. They're being charged with acquiring and possessing banned performance-enhancing drugs. And these charges could lead to up to 5 years in prison and fines of up to 75,000 euros, or about 125,000 US dollars. Now, the trial has been going on for just about a week now, and David Miller, who, as you may know, was banned from cycling for 2 years after he admitted to a French judge several years ago that he had used EPO three times, once in 2001, twice in 2003, including at the 2003 Tour de France. Miller actually testified in this trial about his use of EPO and about the pressure that caused him to go ahead and use the banned substances. Now, about a week into the trial, the prosecutor in the case has now recommended that the French court acquit David Miller, as well as the other six other cyclists on the team, because in the prosecutor's words, they'd already, quote, paid a lot. However, the prosecutor has asked for a one-year sentence for Kofidis' team doctor. I'm going to butcher this name, but here we go. Boguslav Madiak, for his participation in the doping scandal that surrounded the Kofidis team. A decision is expected soon, and when it's announced, I'll let you know right here on the Fredcast. Well, just to close out this section of the Operacion Puerto cast, or at least this doping section of the Fredcast for this week, listener Dan sent me a great link from National Public Radio's website. NPR is a show that they call Fresh Air, which is a time when they do interviews with a variety of people. And one of the interviews they did recently was with Dick Pound, the chairman of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA. Pound has written a new book about doping in sport, and I'll put a link in the show notes to not only to the interview so that you can hear it yourself, but also to Dick Pound's book on Amazon so that you can check that out if you're interested. I will tell you that there are a lot of folks in cycling who are not big Dick Pound fans. I don't really know enough about him to give you my opinion, but I found the interview very interesting. In that they got into some very interesting topics, not just about doping and cycling, but about doping and sport in general. And there toward the end, the conversation started getting very interesting, and I thought that it was going to go in a direction that I thought was going to be very illuminating. And unfortunately, and sometimes because the interviewer thinks that maybe their listener isn't that technically oriented and they're trying to keep the whole interview very general, unfortunately he cut it short just when things were getting interesting, and listener Dan pointed that out to me as well. I put a link in the show notes to that interview. It's about 20 minutes long, and I think you will find it interesting, so I encourage you to go and check it out. You know, I always feel a little dirty after we get through those doping stories. So let's move on to a little bit of cycling business. Those of you who are into mountain biking or have ever even looked at a mountain bike have probably heard the name Answer Products before. Answer Products, based in Valencia, California, is probably best known for creating forks, shocks, bars, stems, all sorts of clothing and other mountain biking related items. They were recently purchased by HB Performance Products. Now, you may not know the name HB Performance Products, but you probably do know the name Hayes or Hayes Bicycle Group. They're the ones who manufacture Hayes disc brakes. And over the last couple of years, they've been on an acquisition bend. They recently acquired Sun Ringlay, and earlier this year, they acquired Wheelsmith. According to Chris Smith, Answer's Director of Global Sales and Marketing, it's a good marriage. He said that Hayes' goal is to manufacture every part other than the frame, and he added that it's still, quote, business as usual for Answer. So this could be good news for mountain biking consumers, as well as for Answer customers, because a lot of times when you get a company that has the dedication that HB obviously does to the mountain biking market and to the cycling community in general, a lot of times not only does it infuse cash into a company, but it also infuses some enthusiasm and some morale among the employees, and that includes designers and marketing folks, and sometimes that can develop really great new products and a great new attitude at the company. So congratulations to HB, and it sounds like also congratulations to Answer Products on the new partnership. Now, for those of you who have been with the Fredcast since the very beginning, and we're coming up on our one-year anniversary here next month, which is kind of exciting, if you've been with us since the beginning, you know that one of the first stories we talked about here on the Fredcast was when the Colorado State Patrol decided that they were going to cap bicycle events. In other words, they were going to keep the number of participants in bicycle events like centuries, double centuries, and things like that, because they were concerned that motorists and cyclists weren't sharing the road, and they were concerned about the number of resources that the Colorado State Patrol was going to have to devote to each of these cycling events. Well, that effort was stopped, and the Colorado Patrol decided that they were not going to actually cap the number of participants in cycling events. But there are groups in the state of Colorado, here in the United States, of course, that are looking to spread the word among cyclists and motorists about sharing the road. And that's why Bicycle Colorado, put a link in the show notes, is launching a Share the Road license plate campaign to reinforce that bicycles are welcome on roads and to fund bicycle safety education programs. So what they're trying to do, just like 10 other states in the United States, they want to come up with a special license plate that would go on vehicles that would be just for cyclists. And it would have the phrase, share the road, and of course, show a cyclist. We've talked about other plates. I remember we talked about the Texas license plate that showed what was probably a likeness of Lance Armstrong on their Share the Road license plate. If they're able to create these license plates, funding from each license plate will support Bicycle Colorado's Share the Road Education Fund to help make roads safer and more welcoming for cyclists. Now, in order to make this happen, the state of Colorado requires at least 3,000 Colorado citizens to sign the petition to move this legislation forward. The more people who sign the petition, the better the chances are that this license plate will actually get made. Now, the 2007 legislative session in Colorado begins in January, and the window to collect signatures is going to close very soon. So, here's what you need to do. If you are a citizen of the state of Colorado, Bicycle Colorado is asking you to, number one, sign the petition. And you can do that by going to the show notes for show number 42 at www.thefredcast.com, going up to the top of the page, clicking on show notes, and then clicking on show number 42. And in the link in the show notes, I've got a link to the petition page. Click that. It will take you to the page. Sign the petition. The next thing they want you to do is what I'm doing right now. Spread the word. Tell your fellow cyclists to go and also sign the petition. I'd love it if you pointed them to thefredcast.com so that they could find the show notes there and, of course, maybe find the show and become listeners. Spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, cyclists or not, that you want this to happen and get them to sign the petition. And finally, if you are a blogger or you know somebody who is a blogger, there's a link. Again, it's in the show notes and I've listed it as blog post link. And they want you to put this link on your website. Or, like we talked about earlier, if you're going to bike forums or if you're going to the Fredcast forums, put this link in your post so that other cyclists in the state of Colorado and other interested parties can go and sign the petition. You have a very short amount of time to do it, so please do it now. And finally tonight in the news comes word from USA Cycling about a program that I have told you about in a previous show. You'll remember that a couple of shows ago, I told you a little bit about traveling with your bike. And one of the things that I recommended was if you are a member of USA Cycling, that they had a partnership with United Airlines where you would get certificates that would allow you to fly your bike for free on United Airlines as long as you had one of the vouchers. Well, if you're a USA Cycling member, you probably got this email and it says, "It is with great disappointment that we tell you USA Cycling was informed by United Airlines that they will be unable to continue their sponsorship support of USA Cycling in 2007. It goes on to continue, "What does this mean for you, the members? Unfortunately, it means that USA Cycling members will no longer be entitled to receive two bikes travel free vouchers for United Airlines with the purchase of their 2007 license. United said that it decided to discontinue its relationship with all other national governing bodies and focus their sponsorship efforts on the U.S. Olympic Committee." So, unfortunately, you will not be getting vouchers with your 2007 USA Cycling membership. All the vouchers that you have, according to this email, that have an expiration date of January 31st, 2007 will be honored until January 31st, 2007. But after that date, they expire. And starting February 1, you're going to have to start paying for your bike on United Airlines. So, you know, I thought this was a great program. It was something that I talked about on that show about traveling with your bike. It's unfortunate. Things like this do happen. If I find any other programs that are like this that should pop up, I will be certain to let you know right here on the Fredcast. And that's going to do it for the news for the week of November the 13th, 2006. Well, before we get on with our feature section tonight, and I know we're going a little bit long, so I'm going to be a little bit brief, I wanted to remind you all about the fact that I'm working on the 2007 Fredcast Holiday Gift Guide, and I need your assistance. I want you to send in, if you haven't already done so, and I've gotten some great emails so far, I want you to send in your ideas for this year's Fredcast Holiday Gift Guide. You can send in expensive, really Freddy items. You can send in really inexpensive stocking stuffers and everything in between. And I've gotten great suggestions from a couple of bucks on up to a couple of $1,000 or a couple of €1,000 or a couple of €1,000 or wherever you are. Please send in your ideas for the holiday gift guide within the next week. The deadline for your submissions is November the 20th. So please stop whatever it is you're doing, which is listening to... Okay, when you're done listening to the Fredcast, go to your computer, shoot me an email to giftguide@thefredcast.com. And if you don't remember that, it's okay. I've got a link in the show notes. Go ahead and click that. giftguide@thefredcast.com. Send me your ideas for the 2007 Fredcast Holiday Gift Guide. And, of course, there's a little incentive for doing so. I'll be giving away a great cycling prize that you can keep for yourself, and it will be my gift to you, or you can give to the cyclist in your life that you think might really enjoy it. I've got one prize for a winner that will be chosen at random from all of the entries, so you've got one more week to get your entry in and be considered for the prize. Trust me, you're going to like it. Can't say quite yet what it is, because it's a surprise, of course, but please send in your ideas for the holiday gift guide. I'd like this to be something that's really coming from the Fredcast listeners. So the listeners' gifts to other listeners. Thanks so much for participating. I appreciate it. And of course, if you win, you will probably appreciate it as well. Well, one thing that I think will probably be on my list for this year's Fredcast Holiday Gift Guide is the product that I'm about to review right now. Now, if you're new to cycling, perhaps you're a new fan of professional racing, or maybe you've just been living under a rock for the past few years, then chances are you haven't heard of a gentleman by the name of Scott Cody or his film, The Tour Baby. Well, for the rest of us, Scott Cody is a household name, sort of like Bob Roll, Ernesto Colnago, and Floyd Landis. Like most of us, Scott is a cyclist, and he's a pro cycling fan. His passion for cycling began in 1985 when, as a graduate student, he bought a bike and he got bit by the cycling bug like a lot of us. And since that time, he's been riding and racing all over the U.S. Now, in 2000, Scott made a trip to watch the Tour de France from start to finish. In the beginning, his trip was inspired by the fact that the organizers of the tour that year decided to include Mont Ventoux for the first time in 30 years. Since Scott and a friend had ridden Mont Ventoux on a trip to France in 95, Scott thought it would be fun to watch the pros battle toward the summit of this mountain. Shortly before embarking on his trip, Scott purchased a video camera. He was hoping just to share the tour with his friends back home. Well, like a lot of us who have taken too much video on a vacation, Scott got home 3 weeks later and he'd accumulated over 18 hours of footage. At this point, Scott wasn't a filmmaker, but at some point after his return from France, he was inspired by his best friend's daughter's battle with brain and spinal cancer. This inspired him to turn his footage into a film. And the result was his first film, The Tour Baby. and it was released on DVD in August of 2003. It raised over $160,000 for the Lance Armstrong Foundation, $50,000 for the Davis Finney Foundation, and became a cult hit among cyclists and cycling fans. So if you're looking for a great cycling gift, Scott's first film, The Tour Baby, is a great suggestion. But now I've got another one. Scott recently released his second film, and this one's called Cobbles Baby. And if you know anything about professional cycling in Europe, you know exactly what this is about. It chronicles his trip to see the Queen of the Classics, the Hell of the North, also known as the Paris-Roubaix. And this was the 2004 edition of Paris-Roubaix. Now, I recently watched the DVD, and I have to say that I was hooked from the very beginning. And in case you don't know, and you know, if you just don't know about the race, Paris-Roubaix is one of the so-called spring classics. Unlike some of the more widely known cycling races, things like the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta a España, spring classics are single-day, long-distance events, and they showcase some of the best riders in the world. But what makes Paris-Roubaix special are its multiple pavé or cobblestone sections. Now, these are sections of very old, in a lot of cases, very old cobblestone roads that are extremely difficult to navigate, especially on narrow tire road bikes. And of course, while trying your best to go as fast as possible in order to win a race. In some cases, as the film clearly shows, the pavé sections are more mud and rock than cobble, but each cobble section is fraught with danger. And, I mean, it's almost like there's invisible hands that are reaching, just waiting to reach up and grab the wheel of a rider and bring him crashing to the ground. Now, in the film, not only does Scott bring the viewer along as he and his team chase the peloton throughout the race, through northern France and Belgium, but it also includes some behind-the-scenes footage of the pro peloton, the media, the families of racers, and the teams. In one segment, Scott gets amazing access to the U.S. Postal Service team vehicles and gets an up-close look at the changes that go in each rider's bike for such a grueling race. Because you can imagine, with all these cobblestone sections, they need really beefy wheels. They even have different forks than they would normally use in a regular road race. It was fascinating to me, especially with the access that Scott was able to get to the team wrenches, to the team vehicles. He walked into one of the team trucks. This was so cool. There were frames everywhere, different frames for different riders, for different terrain. It was really cool. And it was, you know, it was the kind of thing that we've all wanted to do, to get into the pits, to get to talk to the mechanics and find out how they get the racers ready. And Scott was able to get that access. It was great. So if you've ever wondered what goes on in the pits of one of the world's best cycling teams, you're not going to wonder anymore after you see the film. Now, besides the interviews with Team Wrenches, Scott also gets a chance to interview George Hincapie before the race, and he even gets a few words from George's father during the race. Very, very cool. Now, attending and watching a race like Paris-Roubaix is a dream come true for most cyclists, and of course for most cycling fans, but Scott makes you even more jealous, at least he made me jealous, when he appears in an Irish pub drinking with Phil Liggett. So of course you're wondering, right? If Scott's drinking and he's standing there talking to Phil, who's also drinking, who's running the camera? Turns out it was none other than Paul Sherwin. And then when everybody sits down to enjoy each other's company and some impromptu blues harmonica, who ends up walking into the pub? Cycling legend Sean Kelly, who then shares his thoughts about the Hell of the North. Now, Cobbles Baby runs about 40 minutes, and from my perspective, it's highly recommended for any cyclist, and especially for the pro cycling fan. The DVD also includes short special feature clips, including Scott's visit to the beaches of Normandy, a visit to Johan Museu's hometown, as well as a glimpse at his last professional race, a visit to Belgium's cycling center, where some of the top young cyclists are being trained, and you may have read about that in Bicycling Magazine recently, so it was cool to see it in real life and actually see Scott interviewing some really great up-and-coming professional cyclists. And there's a whole lot more on the disc. It's available for $24.95 plus shipping and handling at Scott's website. And of course, I put a link in the show notes. And $1 from each purchase is going to be donated to the Davis Finney Foundation for their fight against Parkinson's disease. Now, although I'm still gathering ideas for the upcoming holiday gift guide, rest assured, Cobbles Baby is definitely going to be on the list. Oh, before I forget, for those of you who are in Northern California, if you're interested in attending a screening of Scott's new film, Cobbles Baby, you're in luck. The Northern California High School Mountain Bike Racing League is having benefit screenings of the film starting on Thursday, November the 16th, and going all the way through Tuesday, November the 21st. On Thursday the 16th, you can see it in Larkspur at the Lark Theater and in Oakland at the Grand Theater. On Saturday, November 18th, you can see it in San Francisco at the Randall Museum. On Sunday, November 19th, in San Jose at the Camera 12 Downtown Theater. And on Tuesday, November 21st, if you're in Orinda, you can see it at the Orinda Theater. So not only do you have the opportunity to purchase the DVD at Scott's website, but you can also see it in a screening that will benefit the Northern California High School Mountain Bike Racing League. I think that's really cool. Give you a chance to see the film with other cyclists. So there you go. One more thing I wanted to mention tonight, as far as products go, something that is sort of new and that is, at least for me, a little bit untested, but I wanted to mention it to you because it's something that you might be interested in. We've talked here before about podcasts that will give you music that will help you pace yourself while you're cycling and get you through a workout. We've also talked about products that will do the same thing. Remember, we talked about the Nike iPod product where you could get music that would sort of build in tempo depending on what you were doing in your workout. Well, I found some software that will do this for you also, some Windows software as well as some Macintosh software, where it will scan your music library and it will look at the tempo of your songs and try to put together playlists for you depending on how long you want your workout to be. And the not only will it do it by time, but it will also vary the tempo depending on how you want your workout to go. So if you want to do an interval workout, of course, the music would go slow and then fast and then slow and then fast. Or maybe you wanted one that was sort of a hill workout, so it would build the tempo sort of as you get to the top of the hill and then drop the tempo down as you got down, and whatever other profiles you were looking for. So three products I wanted to mention to you. I've really only tried one of them because it's a Macintosh product. The other two are for Windows, but something that you can check out that I think that you might find interesting, and especially as a lot of us are moving our cycling indoors here in the Northern Hemisphere as the days have gotten shorter and the mornings and evenings have gotten colder. So the first product is for Macintosh. It's called Tangerine. And of course, I've put a link in the show notes to all of these. The next one is called Sound Flavor DJ, and that's for Windows. And finally, the third is called The Filter, and that's also for Windows. Links to all three of these products are in the show notes. And if you do get a chance to try them out and they work for you, or if they don't work for you, let me know. I'll tell you what I would really love is if one or two of you might send in an audio comment so that we can let other Fredcast listeners know whether or not these are working for you as you're working out, and whether you're listening on your computer, your home stereo, on your iPod, or perhaps you're about to get a new Microsoft Zune. Love to know whether or not this software is working for you. I played around a little bit with Tangerine, thought it had some really cool features and some really great potential. It's still in beta right now, so the more users that are out there using it, like you, then we can give them some feedback and really improve the product. So check them out. Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear your comments and share them with your fellow Fredcast listeners. Finally tonight, I just wanted to bring you one upcoming ride, and this one again is not your typical ride. It's not a Century, a Double Century, or anything like that. We've talked before on the show about Rides of Silence, and Rides of Silence are usually to commemorate cyclists who have been killed or injured while they've been out doing what we all love, cycling. This one's taking place in the Phoenix area on December the 9th, and I would like to thank one of our Fredcast listeners for bringing this to my attention. This is listener Saul. Again, it's taking place on Saturday, December 9th at 8 a.m. I'll put a link in the show notes so that you get all of the info. This is a 10-mile ride for Wesley Carnes from Gilbert, Arizona, who was killed on October 20th by a motorist. It will also honor two Mesa citizens who were killed by motorists on their bikes in the past year, Sean Michael Casey on September the 23rd, 2005, and Elaine O'Connor on November 27th, 2005. The ride's beginning at Focus Cyclery in Gilbert, Arizona, and it will end at Mike's Bike Chalet in Mesa, Arizona. Again, Saturday, December 9th at 8 a.m. Sign-in is between 7 and 8 a.m. If you're in the Phoenix area, this is a great way to commemorate some fellow cyclists who were killed doing what we love, as well as to help raise awareness for what we talked about earlier with those Colorado license plates, which is the ability for motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians to all share the road. And of course, the more cyclists that show up, the better chance that it will get some media attention in the Phoenix area. And if it gets that media attention, that will just be one more way that we'll be able to raise awareness for the fact that we're all out there and we do need to share the road, and the fact that we cyclists are very vulnerable when we're on the road. So think about doing it. Check it out. If you participate, let me know. We'd just love to share your experiences here on the Fredcast. Well, that's going to do it for the show for this week. I guess I should say for the past 2 weeks. Thanks for your patience, and thanks for all of your emails and phone calls of concern. Yes, I'm back, and I will be back, and I'm not going anywhere, so don't worry about that. I'm not pod fading on you. I love doing the Fredcast way too much. And since I love doing it, I hope you spread the word about the Fredcast. Please, I've said before, tell three friends this week about the Fredcast and get them to subscribe and start listening. Or if you like, go on to iTunes and write a review for the Fredcast. Let those people who are searching know that the Fredcast is your favorite cycling podcast. I'd really appreciate it. Feel free to communicate with me anytime, just like your other Fredcast listeners do. Send me an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And in your email, you can send me text or you can send me an audio comment. Two other ways to send me audio comments. You can use the Fredcast listener hotline, area code 206-203-FRED. Or I've got a link on the left-hand side of the Fredcast page at www.thefredcast.com where you can use audio to send me an audio comment really, really easily. And now it's time for one of my favorite parts of the show, and that is PodSafe cycling music. Tonight's music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And I'm really excited about this because tonight's artist is Jimmy Bratcher. You know Jimmy, he's the one who does the Fredcast theme music at the beginning of the show. That song is called Happy. Well, Jimmy now has a new album, and he just posted it on the PodShow site, and he sent me an email to let me know about it. Most of the songs on that album are holiday-themed, and I think I'll be featuring some of those on some upcoming shows as we get closer to the holidays. But tonight's song, this is just a cool blues riff. It's called To the Four. I've got links in the show notes not only to the PodShow site, not only to Jimmy's portion of the PodShow site, but also to Jimmy's personal website and to where you can find and buy Jimmy's music on iTunes. I encourage you, please, go check it out if you like Jimmy's music or any of the music that we play here on the show. Let the artist know that you enjoy it, or if you have the chance of purchasing their songs on iTunes, please go ahead and do so, because we want to support independent artists who support podcasting. It will ensure that we continue to get great quality music like Jimmy's all the time for a long time in podcasting. That's going to do it for tonight's show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your patience while I just got over some bumps in the road in my real life. I'll be back here next week with yet another show. Until then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
We'll be right back.